Radio Prague News.
The Czech president on Australian television has commented on the brutal bombing and shooting massacre that occurred in Norway. In related news, the Czech president has made international headlines after he refused to go through a metal detector at the Australian Parliament House, and Prague residents have been expressing their condolences and laying flowers at the Czech capital's Norwegian embassy. Commenting on the shooting massacre and brutal bombing that occurred in Norway on Friday, Czech President Václav Klaus, who is currently on a lecture tour in Australia, said the event was beyond comprehension and had shaken Europe. Mr. Klaus discussed his views of the tragedy on Australian news channel ABC News 24. In the interview, he was asked whether there had been a shift in Europe towards extremist or radical views, but he replied that he wouldn't generalize. He did allow that there were others who shared the gunman's views. Mr. Klaus was also asked about immigration and European social and economic policy. In related news, the Czech president made international headlines when he refused to go through a security device on his way to being interviewed in the Australian Parliament House, where ABC One has its Canberra studio. TV producer Michelle Ainsworth, who was waiting to escort the Czech head of state to the station studio, says that Mr. Klaus stopped in front of the security device and said that he would not go through it. Reportedly, the security guard then informed Mr. Klaus that everyone who wishes to enter the building had to pass through the metal detector first. According to Mrs. Ainsworth, Mr. Klaus told her that she could interview him in his hotel before leaving without saying goodbye. Earlier this year, a video clip that showed Mr. Klaus pocketing a ceremonial pen on an official visit to Chile went viral and made international headlines. Over 100 Prague residents laid flowers and signed a list of condolences at the Czech capital's Norwegian embassy on Monday. According to the deputy of Norway's ambassador to the Czech Republic, Tiana Balak Nielsen, the embassy appreciates the outpour of empathy and support from the Czech population. Among those who expressed their condolences were diplomats from a number of countries, the Prague Archbishop Dominik Duka, as well as hundreds of Prague residents who pledged their solidarity to Norway in the wake of the twin terror attacks that killed at least 76 on Friday. A special mass in honor of the victims will be held at Prague's St. Vitus Cathedral this Friday. And now for a brief look at the weather. The coming days should be partly overcast with rainstorms in places and daytime highs of up to 23 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this brings us to the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Fellinger. In today's program, we report on the latest on activists holding a blockade in Šumava National Park following earlier forced evacuation from the area by the police. A leading Roma advocacy group has suspended cooperation with the country's interior ministry. And a little later in the program, join us for a visit to the famous Clementinum, the seat of the Czech National Library. That's all ahead. The number of environmental activists holding a blockade in the Modrava region of Šumava National Park to prevent the felling of bark beetle-infested trees swelled on Tuesday morning in reaction to Monday's forced evacuation by the police. However, logging continues and the protesters have been losing ground, both literally and legally, as a regional court and the Czech Environment Inspection Office found nothing amiss with the management's policy. Sarah Borufka has the story.
After a period of deceptive tranquility, loggers arrived in force at the Modrava site on Monday, and the 27 activists holding an 11-day vigil there were only able to put up a brief passive resistance before the police stepped in to evacuate the area by force where necessary. The park's management was well prepared for the confrontation. It had a court order for evacuation stating that the blockade it was illegal, and moreover, a green light for logging by the Czech Environment Inspection Office, to whom the group of environmental activists had turned for help. Mojmir Vlašin, the group's spokesperson, said on Tuesday morning that the blockade would continue despite the fact that activists were now outnumbered by police.
Yesterday we started really blocked the cutting of trees, and today we continue, but there is more than 60 policemen from the special corps, and we are not able to stop it really in all places. So actually now we try to stop this activity as long as possible, and if we are not able to do it 100%, let's say, which is absolutely clear now, so we tried to do it, let's say, 50%.
Have you tried by some legal means, maybe filing a complaint?
Of course. Our activity started with a negotiation with some complaints to the Environmental Inspection, to complaints to the European Union, DG Environment and others. But now the situation is like this, and we have no other possibility than civic protest.
The park's management, which thanks to environmentalists is now under intense media scrutiny, is nonetheless determined to push ahead with logging as a means of fighting bark beetle infestation, a method complemented by debarking infested trees and using powerful anti-insecticides in places. The park spokesman Pavel Piechouček said the drive to eliminate the bark beetle would continue.
Work on this bark beetle infested area is fully in accordance with the law and will continue as planned.
The park's management says that this particular area, which was formerly part of the no intervention zone, is badly infested and presents a serious threat to still healthy Nordic spruce in the vicinity. It claims that for every tree it cuts, and it has 4,000 trees marked, it may be saving 8 to 10 others, and that another 30 to 40,000 trees would otherwise be in danger. Neither the Czech Environment Inspection Office nor the Environment Ministry have moved to stop the felling, although the latter advised the national park to apply the debarking method over felling wherever possible. Contrary to that is the stand of environment activists who, while conceding the degree of infestation, say that nature should be left to run its course, at least in the protected nature reserve, and that in time it would regain its balance. Playing into the hands of the park's more radical-minded management is the fact that the owners of forests in neighboring Austria have warned the Czech side that they would demand up to 1 million euro in compensation should the bark beetle calamity cross over to their territory. Mojmir Vlašin says that this is still no excuse for felling on the Czech side.
This is another problem, because in the Austrian side, there is common forest belongs to the cloister Schlegel, monastery Schlegel, and this is no national park on the Austrian side. And in this case, it's really necessary to mitigate the problems with the bark beetle on this area. So we say to the national park that there is a method to eliminate bark beetle by not the cutting trees, but take the bark off on the standing trees, which is not so bad like cutting.
On Tuesday, events at Modrava followed pretty much the same scenario, with activists chaining themselves to trees marked for felling and the police cutting the chains and carrying them off. At this point, even Mojmir Vlašin admits it is more of a question of slowing down the logging than stopping it. But he says he and his friends are there to stay for as long as there are any trees left to defend.
Sarah Borufka reporting. A leading Roma advocacy group has suspended cooperation with the Interior Ministry, accusing the police of going soft on far-right extremism.
The group, Romea, says at several neo-Nazi demonstrations this year, police allowed marchers to shout racist slogans without making any arrests. The Czech Interior Ministry denies the claims. Rob Cameron has more.
This footage showing lines of riot police advancing on a demonstration led by an Orthodox priest was shot in the Czech town of Krupka in April. The demonstrators had gathered in the town to stop a group of neo-Nazis from marching through what is predominantly a Romani housing estate. The march had been granted permission by the authorities. The demonstration against it had not. Activists claimed it was a religious service and therefore not subject to official permission. That fine legal distinction apparently went unnoticed by police. There have, in fact, been several such rallies this year, always held under an innocuous pretext, always attracting neo-Nazi skinheads and always choosing areas which are home to large Romani communities. František Kotlan monitors neo-Nazi activity for Romia.
Police have let neo-Nazi activists use openly racist rhetoric at Krupka and at least two other rallies this year. The speakers were clearly breaking the law, yet the police did nothing. At Krupka and elsewhere, neo-Nazis were allowed to march through Roma areas, shouting racist slogans, and the police protected them.
The footage, which first appeared on Romia's popular online news server, romia.cz, was shot by the Romani journalist Patrick Banger. He says police are clearly choosing sides in the conflict between the far right and ethnic minorities, and the wrong side at that.
The police de facto decided which should have a priority, a legal religious assembly or a neo-Nazi march, and it decided the latter. That creates the impression that the police tolerate neo-Nazis, and I guess that impression is accurate.
The Interior Ministry's new Director of Security Policy responded to Romia's public criticism over police handling of the marches by threatening to abolish a working group that had been set up to improve communication between NGOs and the authorities. The threat was later carried out. Romia says the official concerned is responsible both for the change in police policy and the deterioration in communication with NGOs. The Interior Ministry, however, strongly rejects its going soft on far-right extremism, saying it remains a high priority. It released a statement defending police actions at Krupka and elsewhere, saying its primary task is to defend people, property and public order, regardless of whether the law is being broken by far-right extremists or their opponents.
Rob Cameron there with that story. Now, if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard in today's program, don't forget you can contact us here easily at the station by writing to english@radio.cz or by writing to our street address, Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. We're always happy to hear from our listeners, and some of your comments may even make it onto the air in our mailbox program, so do drop us a line. We're now going to turn to our main feature for this day, which is Czech history, this time hosted by Christian Falvey.
Standing in the center of the Clementinum, if you can locate such a thing in the labyrinth, you are surrounded by around a millennium of history and millions of volumes of books inside one of the most beautifully preserved masterpieces of Baroque art the city of Prague has to offer. This is the seat of the Czech National Library, and the whispering and rustling that echoes through its grand halls add perfectly to its natural mysteriousness. Archaeology has shown that this part of the Vltava, at the eastern foot of Charles Bridge, has always been a favorite of the Czechs' ancestors, with evidence of settlement going back to the 400s AD. But the story of the Clementinum begins in the early 13th century, as the library's Libuše Piherová told me as we walked around the vaulted galleries.
There is a legend that there was a female hermit living here who had a dream in which Saint Clement told her that she should visit the Dominicans in Botici and lead them here. The legend says that she convinced them, and the annals show that the Dominicans did indeed come in 1232 and built a monastery that was as large as the students' courtyard here, which is where it was located. Its size, of course, cannot be compared with a Clementinum today. Few people know it, but with its 2 hectares, the Clementinum is the second largest historical building in the city after Prague Castle.
The Dominican order was spreading across Europe and beyond in the 13th century, and despite their emphasis on mysticism and asceticism, Dominican learning and scholarship founded the strong tradition of the future Clementinum in the days of Thomas Aquinas and Albertus Magnus.
Dominikáni měli ambice být zejména dobrými pedagogy, což se jim povedlo.
One of the Dominicans' ambitions was to be great teachers, which they were, and major European educators of the time worked here and created manuscripts of great renown that we still have in our collections. But they were also interested in social matters, and they organized the first local parliaments of noblemen here between the reigns of Ottokar II and Charles IV. So you could really say that this place, the Clementinum, has always been a place of books and learning, a place of the mind, to put it generally.
The Dominicans were also some of the church's best inquisitors, and it was they who imprisoned the Czech reformer Jan Hus in the early 15th century. No sooner did the Catholic legions march on Prague than the Hussites destroyed them, banished the black monks, and ravaged their works.
Bylo to tedy i za těch Dominikánů, kteří zde byli zhruba 200 let, protože v roce 1420...
The Hussites came in 1420 and laid ruin to the monastery and expelled the Dominicans who escaped to Poland. The ruins remained here until 1556 when Emperor Ferdinand dedicated the land to the Jesuits. They, in turn, bought up all the adjoining houses and gardens and began creating an admirable architectural and later ecclesiastical work. Straight away, they established a Latin secondary school, which within 60 years became a college.
The developing dormitories at what would become the Clementinum would soon after be used as a book storage space for the growing Charles University. And the rest, you could say, is history. The present building was constructed by the Jesuits between 1653 and 1726, and has changed very little since then, imparting upon Prague what many call its Baroque pearl.
Jak jsem říkala, jezuité byli i velmi dobrými stavěteli, počítali s tím.
The Jesuits were very good builders, among other things, and the Clementinum was built like a kind of fortress that they called Insula Nostra Clementinum, or Island Clementinum, by which they meant that they were completely self-sufficient here, from the gardens in which they grew vegetables to the very efficient sewage system, printing room, dispensary, study rooms, and everything needed for life.
Úplně vše, co je potřeba.
The enormous complex, perhaps needless to say, also includes a great many ecclesiastical buildings, St. Salvador Church and the Church of St. Clement, the Chapel of Mirrors, chapels of St. Eligius and St. Jan of Nepomuk, and a chapel dedicated to the Assumption. And then there is hall after grand hall, dedicated to mathematics, music, and of course literature.
Co zaujme nejvíc diváka a také na to vždycky ráda upozorním, je vlastně...
What visitors are always most impressed with, and what I always like to point out, is the newest piece of furniture in the Baroque Library Hall, which bears the inscription Bibliotheca Nacionalis. When the monasteries were closed in the 1780s by Joseph II, who saw better sue for them as warehouses and hospitals, their manuscripts were stored in the Chapel of Mirrors here. The second director of the Clementinum set aside the few Czech and Slovak documents that he found and put them in a compartment in the Baroque Library Hall with a sign reading Biblioteca Nacionalis, and that was really the beginning of the National Library.
Což vlastně je začátek Národní knihovny.
The Clementinum is large, all right, but not nearly large enough for the 6.5 million books that the National Library has in its possession. The recent completion of the National Technical Library took a great strain off, but even the central depository built on the other side of Prague in 1997 is past capacity now. Consensus was never reached on a plan to construct a new library in Prague, and so the Clementinum currently finds itself under an extensive 10-year process of revitalization, intended to increase storage space. But then there is more to the Clementinum than just books. One of its most popular features, for example, is its looming astronomical tower.
Astronomická věž byla dostavěna v roce 1722. Jejím stavitelem byl František.
The astronomical tower was completed in 1722, and at first it was only used as a sort of lookout tower. The Jesuits were always interested in using things for study, so from the 1750s they began using it for astronomical and also climatological measurements, among other things. In the year 1775, Antonín Sternad began a series of continuous measurements of the temperature, humidity, and atmospheric pressure. These measurements were taken several times a day, every day, and they are still being taken today.
In the short story The Secret Miracle by Jorge Luis Borges, an aged librarian spends his life seeking a single letter on a single page of a book somewhere in the Clementinum that contains God. There could hardly be a more suitable venue for such an endeavor, given the weight of history and the general all-pervasive mysteriousness of the Clementinum that Dr. Piherová says can be put down to a number of factors.
Neví se přesně, co se tady všechno dělo, ale víme určitě, že například...
We don't know everything that happened here, but we know that during the time of the Dominicans, our tribunal of the Inquisition was headquartered here. We have documentation that in 1414, on one of our courtyards, there were burnings of so-called heretics. So that is a stain on the history of the Clementinum. And there is one other stain. There was the work of Father Coniage, who was a son of a supervisor here and a zealous Jesuit with a flair for oratory, and he would faint during his sermons. He is very well known for having burnt Czech books and survives in nursery rhymes. So the many thousands of books that he destroyed may have been another reason for the gloomy associations of the Clementinum today.
To say nothing of the ghost of Saint Edmund Campion, who studied here in the 16th century before coming up with the unfortunate idea of re-Catholicizing his native England and being tortured and executed almost upon arrival, before returning to the Clementinum 500 years later as a specter of death to terrify the secretaries in the economic department. All these stories and more enjoy tremendous interest among visitors, both foreign and domestic, and will be yours to enjoy again when the building reopens later this year.
Thank you, Christian. Christian Falvey with that edition of Czech History, looking at the Clementinum here in the Czech capital, a site truly not to be missed. www.radio.cz is the website to visit for all the latest news here from the Czech Republic in politics, arts, and culture. So do visit us on the web. We turn to our final feature for this day, which is Soundcheck, where you can learn Czech idioms through song lyrics. And this edition was produced by Sara Borůvka.
Z rozmláceného kostela v krabici s kusem mítla přinesl jsem si anděla.
Welcome to Soundcheck, our Czech language series in which you can learn Czech phrases and idioms through song lyrics. In today's edition, we will be listening to a song by the famous Czech singer-songwriter Karel Krill, a famous dissident who some dubbed the poet with a guitar because of his well-written lyrics. The word to listen out for is tréma.
Díval se na mě oddaně, já měl jsem trochu trému,
tak vtiskl jsem mu do dlaně lahvičku od parfé.
Mít trému can be translated as having cold feet or experiencing stage fright. In contemporary Czech, the term is quite often used to express simply that you are afraid, even if it doesn't involve an exam or a stage performance. Of course, there are many ways to say that you're afraid of something in Czech. Mít strach literally translates to have fear. The thing that you fear is added to the expression with the preposition z. If you want to say that you are afraid of spiders, in Czech you should say mám strach z pavouků. If you want to say that you are nervous about something, you can say mám z toho trému. Have another listen.
Díval se na mě oddaně. Já měl jsem trochu trému, tak vtiskl jsem.
From the word strach also comes the verb strašit, which means to frighten someone, as in čarodějnice straší malí děti, meaning witches frighten small children, and the adjective strašlivý, which means dreadful or in a certain context big, such as in mám strašlivý hlad, I have a big hunger. The word strašpitel is the equivalent of little coward and is mostly used by children. Directly translated, it means a bag full of fear.
Díval se na mě oddaně, já měl jsem trochu trému, tak vtiskl jsem mu do dlaně.
Another word for being afraid is bátce, often used as an imperative by parents. Neboj se means don't be afraid. Or you will hear them say nebuď strašpitel, don't be such a bag of fear. With this, I'm afraid we've reached the end of the program. My name is Sarah Borůvka. Thanks for tuning in for another musical lesson of Czech. Naschledanou.
Díval se na mě oddaně, já měl jsem trochu trému. Tak vtiskl jsem mu do dlaně lahvičku od parfému. A proto prosím, věř mi, chtěl jsem ho žádat, aby mi mezi dveřmi pomohl hádat, co mě čeká. A ne, mi ne, co mě čeká.
Soundcheck by Sarah Borůvka, which remains one of our more or most successful and popular programs, looking at the secrets of the Czech language through song lyrics. If you'd like to hear that lesson again, you can, of course, find it easily in our archives, which you'll find posted at our website, radio.cz/English. I'm Jan Willinger. For all of us here at the station this day, we want to thank you so much for joining us, and take care.